Good afternoon. My name is Sergei Grubanov. I'm working for DNV here in Hamburg, and I'm happier to kick off the last panel discussion for today. In my panel, we will talk about how to navigate through industry transformation, and I would like you to put an owner's perspective on that. We put together an excellent panel with quite a broad view and broad experience from various geography and also various segments. Let me introduce Helge Bartels, Chief Operating Officer from Bernhard Schulte. It's a traditional ship owner based in Hamburg, having about over 75 ships in ownership, but also one of the world's largest third-party ship manager. John Su, representing Erasmus Ship Management Group, being CEO and president of the group with a fleet of, I learned yesterday that it's actually more than 30 ships. What you are
owning and operating? It's around 40, 50 around. Thanks.
Yes, so internet knows a lot, but not always up to the latest development. And it's a diverse fleet of bulk carriers, feeder container vessels, and LPG, where you are growing at the moment the most.
Yeah, precisely. Thank
you. We have with us Jens Arndt, managing partner of Voggemann Reederei. The company, significantly expanding over the last years, placed a large order book of bulk carriers, having 20 ships in the water and about 20 ships on order. And I can say that it's probably the youngest bulk carrier fleet in the world, what Voggemann Reederei is representing. And we have with us Bart Dar, EVP, Executive Vice President, Maritime Policy and Government Affairs at MSC Group, based in Switzerland. If I can say so, because I think you're more based in the airplane, actually.
the airlines take that, yeah.
But we take a ground place as your official office location. And I think I don't need to talk more about MSC Group. Well, it's a fact that shipping is going through a next significant transformation. And the last same or similar scale of transformation of shipping, I would call a change from coal to a liquid fuel or from a steam engine to a diesel engine. Now, drivers of transformation are different. Mainly, drivers are coming from regulators, from our customers, like cargo owners, for example, pushing for decarbonization. However, decarbonization is not the only factor transforming the industry. There are more factors which are playing a significant role. And now I would like to kick off the discussion with a question to you. What do you see as the most significant factors transforming the industry now, shaping the industry, and how you anticipate it will affect the industry in decades to come?
I have about an hour for that, right? Yeah, I appreciate the question. And I think, you know, the biggest challenge is predicting, adapting to, being ready for the unknowns. The things that we can see coming are much easier to plan for. And that includes decarbonization, which is by far, the biggest practical and regulatory and policy challenge we've ever faced in this industry. Maybe the biggest one we will ever face. And the way I analogize it is if you look back at IMO 2020, and technically speaking, on 1 January 2020, the entire world was supposed to change over to a different fuel we weren't ready to use in the past for 60,000 ships. Now, you know, give or take, you know, that's about what happened. And that is going to be a small footnote when this chapter is written in the end about decarbonization. Because the big difference was, there was a technical solution available. If you could afford to buy distillate fuel, you could buy distillate fuel, and you could comply. And technically, the engine manufacturers were up to that. And if not, you had another technical solution and exhaust gas cleaning systems. And then it turns out the energy providers, at the end of the day, brought to market large-scale blended VLSFO fuel. That is very, very small in the sense of accomplishment compared to what we are going to do together as an industry as we continue on this 26-year journey from here to be at net zero for 2050. The solutions are not obvious. The solutions are all expensive. The solutions all have practical implications we've got to manage. And those of us that are on the ship owner operator side of this are facing a customer base that generally is like, yeah, go decarbonize. We insist on it. But they're not really ready to face up to the reality of what that's going to cost. So I use that as an example of one of the things. But I heard someone mention the phrase black swan earlier, and I don't think of all bad events as black swans. The ones you can't see coming, I like to think of those as black swans. But we've had plenty of those, too, and there may be more looming on the horizon. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago speaking on a panel, and somebody said, you know, it kind of feels like we've got a whole flock of black swans lately. And I think that's about accurate, that the frequency and the intensity of these unpredictable events is increasing all the time. I think that's reality, the Red Sea being another example. But what is the strength of this industry? Is as we serve the world's trade needs, because we are the conduit for world trade, we can and have proven we will adapt. And if we can keep doing that, and we keep looking at ourselves as an industry of problem solvers, not ones that run away from a challenge, we'll get there. And I've got bad news. You know, if you don't like the challenge, if you don't like to fix problems, probably not in the right line of work, because this is kind of what we do every day. And I think we will continue to do it and be very successful at it into the future.
Thanks. That was very good definition. Jens, would you agree to that, or you would see some other trends?
We are slightly smaller company than MSC.
Most of it.
Short question. Rather long answer, but I will try to keep it as short as possible. If we look back in 2009, we had also about 20 vessels under management. By 2016, we had, of course, in a very difficult market environment, we had lost more than 50% of our vessels due to being sold. So we had to rethink and reverse our strategy, and previously we were very much focusing on niche segments. It's one way for a small shipping company to survive, so we were actually focusing within the bike segment on 24 small handy-sized bike carriers. But unfortunately, even in a capital-intensive industry, even if you're in a niche segment, it still requires a lot of money, and we are dependent on external investors, and external, not only all investors prefer the most fungible assets. And so we decided to reverse our strategy and to go for vessels as close as possible to the industry standard. In our segment in bike, the industry standard is usually the respective Baltic Exchange index type vessel. For our core segment, it's the 38K Japanese built Imabari. So the idea was to have these vessels, but even better than the industry standard. How did we achieve this without a big research and development team? Of course, we have no crystal ball, but even today, we really have no clue how or which alternative fuel we should use as we are in tramp shipping. We are not in liner services. So, but we took for granted, and which I still believe, that in the end, in the long run, the fuel prices will go only in one direction, which is up. So, we had to focus on very, very fuel-efficient vessels. We have one further unique advantage. We are one of the largest dry bike chartering brokers in the world. And of course, what we say in Germany, we have the finger on Puls der Zeit, so we are in daily contact with all the major players in those segments. So we can talk to them and we get the feedback what they require if they want to have excellent vessels. Furthermore, if you don't have the know-how yourself, you have to get it from third parties. So we are in very, very close dialogue. I have many meetings with the external know-how providers, designers, of course, classification societies, equipment manufacturers, and so on. And last but not least, we had many, many visits to shipyards, prospective shipbuilders. In the end, we just took the best possible design, which was available on the market, which was, funnily enough, a Chinese design, not a Japanese, as many would assume. And we made some further decisions. We went always for the latest and most fuel-efficient main engine. We are making them ready for alternative fuels as far as possible. We are prepare them for shore power. We never select inferior makers. And for instance, we went for NOx Tier 3 vessels when many other owners were still heavily signing Tier 2 contracts. And most importantly, I think we have our own dedicated, highly skilled, qualified site supervision team at every shipyard where we are building. And Sergei is getting nervous because it takes too long. So, but to cut the long story short, the strategy paid out. In January 2019, we took delivery of our first 40K Green Dolphin Handysize Barker, Focus Sophie, and she was the first Handysize Barker worldwide ever to comply with the highest IMO carbon emission standard EDI Phase 3 since January 2019. Another 750 Handysize Barkers, new buildings, have been delivered, but still today, less than 50 comply with EDI Phase 3, and also less than 50 comply with the highest greenhouse gas emission standard A+. And more than one third of these vessels have been ordered and built for us, and of course we are very happy with this. And needless to say, with all uncertainty, our vessels are fetching high premiums compared to the industry standard.
So thank you, Jens. Yeah, you did quite a comprehensive answer to the question. Also, you touched upon how you evaluated to make your fleet fit for the future, having such a big order of the ships, because they need to be not only for 5 years, but for a lifetime fit and competitive on the market. Thanks for that. And now I want to ask you, John, being an interpreter in your heart, I believe, what does transformation mean for you?
Technology-wise? Or
I mean, the industry, maritime transformation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Very, very good afternoon to all. So very, very happy to be back in Hamburg after almost more than 5 years away. My last visit was before COVID pandemic in Hamburg. So I was really very, very happy to see many old friends again after such a long time. And thank you very much for the introduction also, Sergei. I'm sorry that up to now we don't have any DNV class vessel. That's why we seem to look so far up to now. So I mean, it looks a bit mysterious for DNV class friends. But I mean, on the other hand, we are actually humbly being the smallest owner in the panel. I mean, not comparable with MSC or any other panelist. But on the other hand, proudly, as the youngest company, we have only 15 years history. We set up from scratch. And traditionally, we also focus on large bulkers. And then in the last few years, we tried successfully to going through all the difficult market cycles and then also diversified into different sectors. Into feeder container vessels and then multi-purpose vessels and also small LPG coaster sized vessels. So in terms of technology, transformation, all this part, I think, as I mentioned also last month at the Capital Link Tokyo Forum, there are too many mixed signals and then too many choices also So we have seen many owners, large owners, have ordered a dual fuel of different choices on order book. Well, in our own case, we try to, let's say, avoid being a victim rather than to be a beneficial party from any unexpected events or situation of the market. So because we need to be make sure that we are there to deliver and we are there to perform, because our main marketplace is in Japan. We still have more than 10 new building orders in Japanese, various Japanese yards. And then, of course, our financing also mainly out of Japan as well, instead of any new building order in China up to now. So, in the term of this technology, I would say that I was joking last month at Tokyo Forum that unless there are a three-fuel or multiple-fuel solutions, maybe we try to step on. Otherwise, we will rather take a wait-and-see situation than until big companies really make a much more clear picture and direction for us, and then we will probably follow later. So in that sense, that's also part of the reason why we choose to do relatively smaller size of vessel, because these smaller segments, we feel at least, is probably the last segment to be impacted by the technology regulation respect, something like that. Thank you.
Thank you, John. That means you take more conservative approach and you observe what big players are doing, then go for a proven technology rather than...
Yeah, it's like, take for example, the small pressurized LPG carriers that we are owning and ordering at the moment. It's like their daily consumption is only 7-8 tons. So what we can talk about for dual fuel or more efficiency, if we do slow skimming, and it can be 5-6 tons only. So, but they are very much positioned around the world, different trade, very, very regional filtering services as well. So that's why, I mean, the pressure or motive behind for us is on the technology side is relatively small.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Helge, I see you brought with your toolbox of various things, and I'm just excited how you're going to use them, which one is... Could be looking like a crystal ball. I'm not sure whether it is, but it's a ship inside.
Can we buy those?
I don't even want to guess how you're going to use those tools, but I'm just excited to see how that works. Bernhard Schulte has been for a long time a leader in innovation. As we look into the future, how you are ensuring that your fleet is fit for the challenges ahead? And we would say both in terms of technology and sustainability.
Okay, the good news is, and that's the reason why I brought that. We have a crystal ball. Of course, it's box-shaped, otherwise you can't store it. We are absolutely capable of looking into the future. And then we can open it. So what do we learn from that saying? Better be prepared, right? So... the question doesn't come out of the blue. We are prepared. And as Bud already stated, of course, we try to be problem solvers and we try to prepare for all that's up there coming, which we actually don't predict. So putting that to a more realistic, shipping is about connecting. So how do we ensure that we can manage challenges? Well, we are connecting each other. We are communicating. We are cooperating. We are working together. We are getting all kinds of expertise, experience. We try to do that across our own group, but also across all the different maritime sectors that we have, businesses that we know and that we can ideally combine and connect. And this is what enables us to basically be prepared for whatever is there to come. It is conferences like these, so thanks for the invitation and the chance. But it's also about learning more, knowing what's going on, preparing for the better and the best, and to continuously improve for that. So in principle, and I don't think that's a matter of the size of the company or the difference in strategy, it is about how and what we are doing. And if we are connecting, working together in terms of cooperation, and if we communicate, for sure we will be managing the challenges and the risks ahead. And I think that's, to a good extent, the the strategy that we are following, besides trying to be innovative as we have methanol offshore vessels under construction, as we're having one of the first CO2 carrier tankers, which has all kinds of nice energy-saving technologies from flattener rotors to air bubble systems. So we are participating in that. But I'm very sure, just as John just said, you don't always have to be the guinea pigging first mover, which could likely cause a hit. And that, I think, has to do with the sizes of the companies. And in that respect, everybody has to take its role. And this is what we're also living up to. So I think that is what we are and how we are preparing for the future. We're connecting, cooperating, communicating, and trying to get the best out of us all.
Thank you, Helge. I think you could give an advice to the audience, also to our panel members, what they need to have in order to be well prepared for the future. It's a relatively simple toolbox, how I could see it. Well, there was a very interesting opinions I heard. And as we heard many times today, sustainability and environmental regulations are playing more and more significant role in our business environment and becoming even more complex. But you've been dealing with regulation and policies for many, many years, and you gain a lot of experience how to deal with it in an efficient manner. Could you give an advice maybe to our listeners here how to make sure that company stays in compliance with the regulation and at the same time remain competitive on the market?
Yeah, I'll give a little bit, but I could benefit from Helga's crystal ball that has a block coefficient of one, I think, about. it's not easy because it's probably not enough, either from a cultural perspective or a long-term success perspective, to just be in a compliance mode and do just what the regulations require. But the further you go in front of that, the more risk you take. And I think with decarbonization, it's a good example where we're kind of changing the tires on the truck as it's rolling down the road, and the regulations are being written at the same time we're trying to comply with them. But what we've done to try to manage that is, first of all, deal in what we know now and what we have available now. And that's why you see we have a very substantial order book as well as for dual fuel methane ships or LNG ships. But we've also got about 24 on the water right now, I think, and all 24 are running on LNG, plus in our cruise fleet, because we are also the third biggest cruise line in the world, two more operating LNG fueled cruise ships with seven more, I think, in the pipeline at the moment. We have that now, and it's about an 8 to 23% weld-awake improvement over the life cycle. Not going to get you to decarbonization, but it's a pretty good start. And why leave that on the table if we can do it now? And then we can progress off of fossil LNG onto bio and synthetic. So we're in our forward-looking planning, we're working every single day to try and identify what those sources for those fuels are going to be so we can start building out those relationships it takes to actually put those advanced fuels in the tanks that really can get us to a net zero future rather than fossil LNG, which helps us now. But keep in mind, if you hear a number like 100, and we do have an existing order book for dual fuel LNG ships of over 100 ships, you're diluting that into a fleet of 850 container ships and well over 1,000 ships overall. So that doesn't mean we're not looking at the other options. And as we look at these ships we're taking delivery of and those that we intend to order in the future, we're thinking about how much can we afford on the front end on the CapEx to make those ships as adaptable as possible as the picture changes over time. Because you might find what looks like the obvious perfect solution in 2028 for a particular design and particular deployment, but that might not be the right answer in 2034. And it might be way off the mark in 2042, but those ships are probably going to be in service. Hopefully they will be over that period of time. So it's not just trying to be right in the abstract or the definite, but also have the flexibility to be able to be right at different phases of this journey that we're all on, whether it's our fleet or overall. And that's typically the way we approach technology in general, and including on the commercial side with electronic bills of lading and other tools like that, where we're trying to make it adaptable to the customer needs over time, because we can't possibly have all the answers today, almost no matter what technology you're talking about. And if you try and prescribe a single answer on a technology-based solution on an expensive multi-decade asset, well, you're not going to be right all the time with that asset. It's going to change over time, whether it's an electronic tool, whether it's a physical asset of a ship like we're adding to our fleet.
Thank you, but that's, I think, great advice. And I think those of you in the room who are not recording the advice made a voice recording that you could use it for your companies. Yeah, let's talk about competitiveness. I think it's a vital element for every enterprise, for every company doing the business. And I read, I hope it's correct, John, on the internet, that Erasmus Ship Invest is committed to growth.
Absolutely.
Where do you see an opportunity to grow during the transformation of the industry?
Well, that's the same question as how to find the crystal ball.
It's not far.
Thank you. Thank you, Siri, for the question. I think, it's a very interesting time, I think. We are absolutely in a crossroad of to left, to right, to which direction we go. And then, of course, the choice is not so many. On the new buildings front, we see that almost all the yards in the Far East, I mean, basically Japan, China, they are almost full up to 2028 at least, which means that almost no chance to do any building. Of course, if any owner is brief enough to pay $80 million for Capesize delivered 2028, I mean, still there are slots. Well, instead of doing that, I mean, putting decarbonization concept aside, just as pure as old school theory to think about any new investment things, new development part, we would rather look at existing vessels. And then, honestly, that's how we done recently, buying from our fellow German owners feeder container vessels, then to fix relatively good enough supportive TC employment. And then at least we feel that this is something that we can relatively manage the risk and return to balance, to arbitrage in between. And I think this is something that definitely we will try to do, something that we feel relatively controllable on that part. So rather than doing really something that new technology driven or this kind of venture capital driven investment, I would say. So it's rather old school, old fashioned. So I think it all depends on the asset value and also the earnings. Obviously, on a dry bulk at the moment, we don't see that kind of connection on asset value and TC earnings support. That's why we are looking at relatively niche market segments. So like feeder container vessels, so like LPG gas vessels. So to make sure that the investment on the asset and also the TC employment support makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you. That was a very interesting view, and the old school doesn't mean it doesn't work today.
In new era, yeah.
Helge, what role digitalization plays in your company's strategy for operational efficiency and competitive advantage?
Well, of course, it plays a huge role, as everybody can see, with all the regulations and reporting requirements getting more and more and more, not replacing, but actually coming one on top of the other. So for the same reason why we never will ever see autonomous shipping, because there's nobody to fill the noon report. So for us, definitely that is something you should work on optimizing and utilize whatever you can in terms of not doing it manually. 10 years ago, we founded a company called Mariab. So we have a company in our group that does software development. It is a modularized, fully ERP system, which basically helps us to do all the ship management in a digital mirror. Mariups is also talking about competition. They are with a big competitor of MSC. They are now in all the Maersk vessels, 364, I think. The software of choice, and of course, talking about an integrated system that also covers the performance part of things. So we do monitor our vessels with our own system. So it plays a huge role because we need to fulfill all these regulatory requirements, and until we are coming to a point where IMO would actually rule on something useful, sorry to say, which would be a data standard. I mean, there is one. DCS is there. And everybody could commit to that. So if we go back to the 1960-something, where somebody said, hey, take this sheet metal box and put tobacco leaves in there. And everybody here speaks English. So in general, we actually learned how to standardize things. I just don't get it why we don't do it in data exchange. I really don't get it. IMO ruled on sulfur and said no more than 0.5. Why don't they rule on data exchange? Take DCS, that's it. Nobody wants more than these 60 values of how much do you use, where do you go, what's the time now, when will you get there. And all these 60 values are always the same for everybody, whether that's a charter, an owner, a regulatory body, etc., etc., etc. So that's my personal favorite in terms of digitalization. Find a common data exchange format, define it, and kill everything else. Amen.
That was a good closing of your answer. I like it very much. And you know probably that DNV is also working to bring standards to the industry with OVD format to support your wish.
Appreciate
it. Me as well. And then was listening today to the panels. I think there were a lot of repeating, but from different angles. And what I learned is that listening to AI specialists or people who are developing AI, artificial intelligence, that we will still need people to navigate the ships. And thinking about navigating through industry transformation, I think we will also need people to navigate industry through the transformation period. Even seeing that digitalization happening even faster than ever before, people remains the crucial element for success in maritime industry, like in any other industry, I would say. And maritime is competing for young talents. Jens, what do you think about challenges we have in shipping to attract talents to shipping instead of any other industries?
Well, here in Germany at least, but probably globally as well, of course, we are suffering from pretty poor reputation the shipping industry gained in the 2010s after 10 years of crisis. So going into shipping industry was not very attractive for many young talents. But today, I can say it's no rocket science. I think give young, talented people, colleagues, responsibility early on, treat them well, treat them properly, and pay them properly. And so I have nothing more to say. It's pretty simple.
Sounds fairly simple. I wonder why we are struggling to get people into the industry. John, what is your view on that? Your ship management arm, Glory Ships, based in Asia, do you see the same recipe, how to get people into the industry, or it's somehow different there?
I think it's a really great question about our maritime industry. The real challenge is on the human being. the resources of people, not only the people who act as crew seafarer on board vessels in certain countries, especially relatively economic developed countries. We can see that almost no seafarers willing, I mean, young generation willing to be working on board as crew as many decades back. I think the similar things in Asia Pacific, in Europe is almost similar. So, and not only at sea, but on shore, the same thing. So what I heard also some certain countries, for example, Japan as well, there's no, almost at Imabari, for example, small city with hundreds of owners local there, but still very, very difficult to find any local technical superintendents. But that's why it's a big market for third party ship managers, etc. But I think except you have a really big skill to have a super good, strong educational recruitment training program to make the people stay in. I think yesterday I was in Netherlands, honestly, very, very regretfully. The Netherlands used to be one of the major forces for maritime nations, as maritime nations in the world, back to many years. And then if we look at today, very few real ocean-going shipping companies, and then also the real talents, continuation, sustainability. Just example, I'm not not intention to offend the Netherlands, of course, is where Erasmus comes from. And this is just as one of the simples. I think, certain hubs like Hamburg, for sure, there's still a huge heritage of maritime spirits. So there are still many long existing companies, large skills. I think that suggests the competitiveness there. So it's really depend on. In the future, I would say that probably certain maritime hubs around the world will remain, that to have a good maritime heritage, but also have a great passion for the young generation. Like in Greece, we can say that shipping is still the number one industry in Greece, that attracting so many young and good talents drawn in this business. Well, thank you.
Thank you, John. It looks like we know what we need to do to attract young talents into the industry, and I know that many companies are doing a lot of different programs to promote the profession, make it more popular. As you mentioned, Jens, that there is a certain history and probably a certain smell which stays with the industry, but over the time, we, I think, take efforts to get out of this image what the maritime industry has. Well, I would like to discuss many more things with you, but somehow we are coming to an end of our time. And I don't want to delay the cocktail reception, which is going to happen after our panel. But before we do that, I would ask every one of you, very short, what is your takeaway from today's? And I think being the last panel of the session, we could capitalize on everyone talking before about the industry and transformation from different angle to it. What do you think is a way through the transformation of the shipping industry, and how shipping company, ship owner could go out stronger out of it?
Well, I'll go ahead and start. Yes. I think, first of all, take a long-term view on things. This is a long-term industry, and those that have been successful have stayed around to ride out the down cycles, which can be very long. It can be more frequent than the up cycles, but then you're there when the up cycles happen. And that doesn't lend itself all that well to outside investors sometimes. So be careful not to be too beholden to those that are offering to invest in our business that really don't have the patience or the temperament to see it for the long term. Number two, I'd say, as Jens said, let's really work together. I'd say it a little differently than he said, to make this industry attractive and understandable to the people that are going to take over from us. I mean, it's our job to do that. We really need to leave that as our legacy. And I urge you all to do what I do, which is challenge myself every single day to say, am I doing enough in that regard? And then the third thing I would say is, if you believe in something, invest in it and follow through in it. And I can think of no better example for my company than how committed we are to this community. I mean, it really is, as John said, a community that's never lost its soul as a seafaring group of people that really respect that heritage and want it. And that's why one of the reasons it made it so attractive to us to make a large capital investment here, followed up by more and more capital investments, higher volumes and more jobs, because that's exactly the type of community you want to be a part of. So if you believe in it, follow through on it.
Thank you. Jens, would you like to add something?
Not much more. So fully agree. And of course, it's a fascinating time. We are in a transition. Like I think you said, we haven't seen something similar for more than a century. And it's fascinating. It's interesting. It's challenging. And but it's also a marathon. And so we should not jump on the first solution. And I would say if you're only a small market player, talk to other people, try to get information and try to make in a world of uncertainty, try to make give pretty decent answers and make proper decisions. So, but this is a challenge.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would say that I think still we need to remember always the basic features, the basic series of shipping, which is absolutely a cyclical industry. And it's global, international, but very, very cyclical. So no matter what kind of the external appearance looks like for decarbonization, for dual fuel, tri-fuel, multiple fuel, whatever the concept looks like, eventually, it's supply demand, is the market decides. So I think this is, we need to just bear in mind, this is at least personally my own learn so far. Thank you.
Helge?
Yeah, I would very much follow my predecessors here. It is a long-term business. It is about cooperation. It is connecting the world. And actually, that allows us to combine the best out of it. So I would add that. And I would give it a name to the third point, which Bud so nicely mentioned, invest in what you believe in. Actually, he talks about a family business, family values. And you can follow that. And if you like that, which I personally do, that is something that you can actually worldwide value. And actually, no matter where you are in the world, I have never seen anybody or heard anybody who cannot follow that one. Talking about family values, talking working for the family, doing good for tomorrow and for his or her own family. I think that this, meaning such an investment in where you put your daily work and effort in, that will always be a success. And as Jens put it, we are talking a marathon. Exactly, that's what it is. And you have to not only run those 42, you have to prepare. So you're running it, and then you're doing it again. It's not that we are reaching this great goal of growth or sustainability or anything like this. It is our daily work. Unfortunately, it's 7 days a week.
At least.
Don't tell all these new talents that we want to get. Talk about life balance worldwide, running around with a laptop, unfortunately also on Saturdays. But there's a positive thing to it. As I said, it's for the common good of our personal histories and personal growth. So I would very much value that.
Thank you very much, guys. That was a great discussion. Great insights what you shared, and you did such a nice wrap-up for me for our conversation that I don't need to do it any longer. But it's evident that navigating through industry transformation is only possible if we collaborate and innovate, and if companies apply the forward-thinking strategies. That's my summary, very short one on that. And thank you for being with us. I think they only left those who are really keen to listen and learn how to navigate through the industry transformation. Thanks a lot, and please give applause to the panel.